It is 10 a.m. in the West Coast, 1 p.m. in the East Coast. It's 8 p.m. in the Middle East. Today, September 22nd, 2014. This is Orly Benny Davis on BBS Radio, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on The Impossible Truth, we will celebrate the end of the Jewish year, looking together at the events of that occur and how they're going to shape the next Jewish year and the rest for general year. We worked together so hard before to see how events can shape and make sure that we calculate well and make sure that we make no mistake, because we all in the same boat. We are working together. This is one world, and we are all trying to do our best. Today, I'm honored to have a very special guest, a wonderful man that served the president of the USA, President Clinton, and he did it very well. A man that his political advice helped shape the world's event. Let me welcome to the show Mr. Hank Shankov. Hank, welcome to my show.
Thank you so much for having me on. How's everything today?
God bless. Everything is good. Getting ready for the new year. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm getting ready for the new year. I'm very excited about it. You know, we are not permitted to be angry or sad. We have to go into the new year with a full heart. So I pray for peace throughout the world, but a peace that will protect human beings. That is a very different kind of thing.
Absolutely. And we're trying to do our best. And, you know, the last year was incredible. And I remember last September, when America almost went to war in Syria, and right now here we are back again, and we are in war in Iraq. So, do you think that we decide well? That America decided well not to go to attack Syria.
You have to go back a minute and look at American foreign policy in the last 6 years or so since the ascension of Barack Obama to the presidency, and it begins badly, and please God, it won't end badly. But it begins badly because of this failure to understand the Russians, to understand Putin, and to renew our security, to renew the American security arrangements in a very public and effective way with Ukraine and Poland. That's one. And when the Russians saw that, they were off to the races, and that meant that they would do whatever they wanted. And they did whatever they wanted in the Ukraine, and they did whatever they wanted in Syria, stopping the world from taking any action by invoking their desire to protect Russian Christians in Syria. So you put that together, the next thing you have is permission for ISIS and every other gangster in the world to do whatever they're going to do, because the great moral force in the Western world and the world in general, the United States, appears paralyzed, and people then do whatever they want. That's the problem.
Well, I think that actually by waiting, we saw the real bad bad ISIS coming out. Because many people think that, you know, it was a bad idea also to go in Iraq 10 years ago. And I think that, you know, seeing all the people coming out right now and fighting each other, we can actually have a real clear picture where we're going. Because before that, everybody was overriding. You know, they have a lot of tunnels. They go underground. Nobody can see. So even if American troops were underground, they were hiding. But right now, we see them all full pledge. And the theology
I'm not suggesting the ground troops are the answer today, but I am suggesting that standing toe-to-toe with the Russians would have been a smart thing. And my betting is that had that occurred and the president done what he was supposed to do, then the Middle East would be a very different place, because the Russians have historically, at least since the early 50s, had a significant investment in the Middle East. And Syria, the ability to protect Assad from destruction in Syria really was extraordinary. So I don't want to see Americans die, and I don't want to see Israelis die, but we have to face some very gruesome facts, and I have younger children. The gruesome fact is that the people we're facing have no love for life, love death, and love to kill for fun. And it's going to be, God forbid, the Israelis first and the rest of the world next.
I think that you're absolutely right. But the question is, what about our global coalition? How are we all getting together? Because the Russian, they must play a role. I know that they're asking them to, you know, to put some pressure on Syria right now. And today, the foreign minister, the secretary of state, John Kerry, met well, actually it would be yesterday, with the Iranian representative. The question is, are we getting this global coalition? Can we start, you know, working on implementing what we want to do, or we just...
Getting a coalition together requires that everybody involved have an investment that is somewhat equal, or that has a moral concern, or that has some joining argument that is overwhelmingly important. So what's the overwhelmingly important argument here? The overwhelmingly important argument for the Polish people, for example, who've been part of the fighting forces in Afghanistan, is, you know, frankly, the relationship to the United States. It ultimately becomes, what can the United States do to assist people in wanting to join that coalition that will matter? The Russians are tied up with other things. They've got Iran on their border. They've got lots of, I don't know how many hundreds, they've probably got significant Muslim population bordering them. We know that for a fact. And we know that within inside the country, they have a Chechnya and another problem. The Chinese are a problem to them long term. The Chinese will smile with them. But, you know, people forget that history is a long time. And the issues with the Americans and Chinese are very significant. And we have yet to resolve them. So the world is kind of a mess. So the coalition plan only if the interest of the parties remains in place.
Well, I think that the interest of the world is right now that to get rid of this ISIS and all this organization that tried to destroy the Western world. It's something that we need to succeed in it, and there is no relentless effort that we need to do that. And if anybody thinks that it's a mistake to act now, well, think again. They're going to be stronger and stronger. But, you know, from information that I get on the ground, some people say, you know, we're giving them too much credit, because they use the internet, they use the media to represent themselves as a global and strong. But some other people say that actually they have tools. They took control of oil fields. And they have, ammunition that it's, been taken from Allied forces. So how dangerous are they?
They're very dangerous because they spark a popular court with people who feel rightfully so in that part of the world, that there is no hope, there is no future, and the only future that exists is to go to war and die. But the other problem is the Muslim world has historically been a conquering body. Islam spread throughout the Middle East through violence and war and forced conversions. I mean, the Americans often forget that the Marine Corps anthem begins from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, where the Marines were dispatched, right, to stop the forced conversions and murders by the pirates off the coast who were Muslim tribesmen. I mean, this is not new information, correct? So we forget sometimes the beginnings of these things, and in the West we're kind of delusional. We just don't want because we want to be peaceful people. We really don't want to believe that we live in a very bad neighborhood overall. And with globalization and global communications, the world has become one generalized bad neighborhood.
Exactly, and you know, going back to the war that Israel just finished not long ago with Hamas. It's something that, you know, people don't realize, that their culture is and their will is to destroy the state of Israel. It's nothing, new for the Israelis, but the world seems to forget it. They seem to think that they can come to the table and cut a deal and go back. And on top of everything, in all this relationship with the Palestinian, Jerusalem was, never put on the table like the city of David, like the holy city that it should be, and the Jewish people are the custodian. It always seems like they want to go back to the borders of 67 and they want Jerusalem.
Well,
like
listen,
it's something
we had a population exchange. We had a population exchange. It was called 1948. After that, the Arab countries and the North African countries decided that they would toss the Jews out, take their property, kill a few of them, and force them out. That was our population exchange. It was about 800,000 people. This nonsensical argument that refugees should be kept permanent refugees is idiotic. If that's the case, then this is the only group of refugees that have not, after war, who remain in refugee camps. The rest of the world disperses their refugees, number one. Number two, the Jews are the only people who have spoken the same language, lived in the same place, that shared the same culture, in the same locale for 3,000 years. So this is nonsense. What we're doing is we're not telling the world the truth, and that is a dangerous thing. If something, as we stand here with Chas V'Sholom, happens to Israel, the West will be very, very sorry, because then they will empower the enemies of freedom to destroy them.
Exactly. Well, actually, Israel is holding the first line of defense for in the war of terror and the war of the extremists against the Western world, and people don't realize that the Israeli, with their bold, you know, in the chutzpah sometimes, they're standing the ground. And those settlers that everybody likes to, you know, to say bad thing about them, they actually are holding the ground and the borderline just to secure Israel. And I think that
argument that the Israelis don't want peace is ridiculous. I think it is about success, ultimately. It is about the fact that in a mere under 70 years, that a people who were dispersed and lived on hard-boiled eggs and yogurt for a long time and had nothing created a nation-state that today leads the world in technology and has bettered every life on the planet. If the Israelis stopped, if Teva Pharmaceutical and Israeli companies stopped manufacturing medicine for a day and did not export the surgical techniques and other technology that has made the world a better place, it would be very different. It would be a very different world. And the world doesn't get that. They have a different viewpoint. And ultimately, they will pay the price if they don't understand what is going on.
Well, I think that they are enlightened right now. It's not going to happen again because we have, thank God, the networks to work together, and they have the ability to realize what Israel and the technology and the Jewish people and all in all the diaspora are doing. The Jewish people being a force of economy, force of knowledge, a force of education and charity all over the world. The Jewish people in America are the only group that contributes so much to the community that helped sustain the nation. People don't realize how much the Jewish people are doing, you know, their effort, their charity, and they're working day and night to help the world. Tikkun Olam, you know, the helping to restore world peace, it's something that it's embedded. And I think that this time around, we are on a different page. This time around, the world is gonna, you know, count their dots and write. And I'm sure that they, you know, it's going to turn differently. And, you know, this is the end of the new year. And there is a lot of resolutions, you know, that people do. And if you would think and reflect about the Jewish people in all, and there are so many people are coming every day now back to the Jewish state from Ukraine. We had so many. We had from France, 6,000 people just moved. The anti-Semitism is rising in Europe, and it's awful. They forgot, obviously, but at least they have where to run to. Would you think that our job is done as settling the Jewish state? Do you think that the world diaspora need to take a page and reconsider from settling elsewhere and, you know, come and flourish the land elsewhere, you know? Settlers are something that, you know, people always remember from the pioneer of America. But isn't it a time that we all come together and, you know, be safe, be in one nation? You know, do you think the diaspora feels sometimes this way? Do they want to come?
I think
ever
the diaspora, outside of Europe is ballooning itself, including in the United States, for a host of reasons. You know, Goetz Ali, who's a very important German historian, just wrote another book. He wrote Hitler's Beneficiaries, and he wrote a book called Why the Germans, Why the Jews. And if you substitute in language and cult in different locales, you'll find the same response. Jealousy and envy are very important elements when you are unique, alone, and stand apart and create excellence and then occupy significant places of interest and import in different countries that you're in. People tend to pay attention, and they're not happy about it. Diaspora Jews don't get the point that you can complain about the Zionist movement all you want, but the Torah is largely about the state of Israel, the Medinat Yisrael and its creation and its population. You can tell yourself fibs all day long, but Ben Sion Netanyahu, who was the scholar, the great scholar, may he rest in peace, on the Inquisition, made the point very clearly, as does Gotelli. It was Gotelli. It was all about defining Jews as a race, and nothing has changed. And we can fool ourselves and try to believe that if only we'll go to Harvard and Yale and we'll go to the social clubs, everything will be fine. That's not the case. People will remember. They always do.
Because
when I travel, no matter where I've traveled in the world to do business, it's always the same. It hasn't changed.
It didn't change at all. Well, I think that we have a long way to go, because something is going to change, because the promises, you know, there is a good promise at the end, and we believe in the Torah and the Bible, and we know that, you know, the promise of the prophets supposed to come someday, so there is hope. And I know, as a God of Israel, that I believe in you too, you can understand that there will be a turn of events sometimes, that people realize that the Jewish people are people that's supposed to enlighten people, other people, to bring the new things to the world and to be the custodian of the holy places. And I hope that they remember that for Jerusalem's sake, because Jerusalem is the heart of the world, and it's the holiest city of all, and it should be good.
I just wanted to share this thought with you. What makes people believe for 30 seconds that if the Israelis do not control Jerusalem and the Holy Land, that somehow what occurred before will be reversed, that pilgrims will be permitted to go where they want, that holy Christian holy sites will be protected? This is absolute nonsense. In Israel, there are no murders of Christians, but there are murders of Christians and making countries Christian rhymes throughout the Middle East. There are no abuses of people. It's the only country in the Middle East that takes in people from throughout the world and gives them sanctuary, not just Jews, but others. It's the only country in the Middle East that welcomes people of color in significant fashion. Try, you know, the gay parade, no matter what your feelings are about it, it goes on in Tel Aviv. Try to do that in some other country in the Middle East. We're the only country in the Middle East that understands freedom and seeks to protect it. Until the world understands that, they'll be very sorry, because they're going to go through a very difficult period, in Europe particularly. Why? Because that's the nature of things.
Absolutely. And, sir, I wanted to thank you for the time, and I want to salute you for incredible effort that you made for the world, because your work for the world is immense. I'm sure that there will be a lot of story to be told, and a lot of books to be read about you, sir. And I remember one time when we sat in New York City and getting a letter for the Jewish people from the Italian representative. That was an awesome moment in my history, at least. And I'm so thankful
to
you.
You're told in the Torah to Tzedek, tzedek, tildor, for righteousness you will pursue. But in the case of the state of Israel, the righteousness is about protecting the world from its own inability to see that which is true. ISIS is Hamas, Hamas is ISIS, Islam is Hamas. All these people have one desire, to destroy, not to create. The amount of money that's gone into Gaza and into the Palestinian authorities, the Rishon LeZion, you would think that there would be jobs, factories, plants. You would think there would be grass growing. But no, it's far easier for the world to blame the Israelis than to look and say, wait a second, what didn't someone else do? Because it makes them feel better. You know, they'll be very sorry if they don't get the point very quickly.
I know, and I think we have to push. We have to keep on going, keep on praying, and keep on blessing everybody and holding each other, you know, tight, because, United Jewry will be very, very useful at this point in time. And, you know, on this is the eve of the new year, I wanted to bless you and your family and everybody in New York City and elsewhere with the best of luck, best year ever. And it may be sweet as honey, as we say, and it be flourishing, and may we see peace in Jerusalem sometime soon. Amen.
The city of peace. Amen. All the best to you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. God bless you. Thank you so much. And let's go to a break now. And that was Hank Shenkov, a guy that really I can trust to have an opinion about the world. It's really complicated to follow such a man and understand is the realm of his universe. But there is another guy that his realm of universe is always immense and always good and great. And at the end of this Jewish year, I would like to welcome Gerald Donald, a guy that the sky is the limit for him. Gerald, welcome to my show.
Thank you, Ollie. Oh, thank you.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Doing great.
I'm great. I'm thankful for you, spoke. I'm good. I'm thankful for you, for coming on the show. And, you know, this new year is coming, and we all hope for the best. And this last year was really exhausting.
So last year was not a good year?
Well, I don't know, but the forces, you know, you that work with energy and you work with understanding the humanity, would you enlighten us? How can, you know, humanity can bring along people to work together? And, you know, this global alliances that we're trying to reach, that it's so difficult to convince people to take the fight for the good cause. What makes people so reluctant?
Well, first of all, this old world is dying. The patient is in a terminal state right now. So, and there's a new birth. It's not going to disappear, but there's a new birth of a new world coming. So, like any birth, you know, when you're in the canal and you're about to get birthed, there's a lot of pain to be experienced by many entities, many systems, many perceived belief systems and notions. So that's what we're feeling right now.
We are feeling the pain. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, all the old systems are coming up because they're fighting it. The ones that are causing the biggest amount of problems are the systems that perceive, you know, instinctively that they are about to be discarded. So that's why we're feeling so much pain.
All right. So you think that the world is ready to get to a new consciousness? Because, you know, by all
it's
means...
It's already happening, though.
I agree completely, because the consciousness had to change with all this new media transparency, understanding, knowledge, the amount of knowledge that we multiply constantly, but worldwide.
Well, that's not necessarily a good thing, because it's not the amount of knowledge, because you need to revisit the axioms, the basis of knowledge. So as people are looking for answers, they're searching in all kinds of directions, but they don't search if the basis of their belief system or the basis of their scientific belief system or whatever basis there is valid. So what needs to be done is revisiting the basis, the axiom, the core.
But, you know, talking about basis and something that we all learn in the Jewish faith, that you stay with the Torah, you stay with the Bible, you stay together with God, you will always know the truth. And you will know what way to go.
Yeah, but you have three Jews and you have 75 opinions about the Torah, too. Okay, so you're always staying around the Torah, yeah. Everybody's staying around the Torah, but nobody's agreeing about what the Torah really meant.
I think that it's actually an excellent point. Well, it gives a flavor, different flavors, so but not all people will follow the
same
thing.
It's not just flavors. No, it becomes a reality, because it becomes a behavioral system, it becomes a ritual, it becomes a... it's like everything else. We have the same problem in the Quran, you know, people have like, you know, like 70,000 interpretations of it.
That's what I wanted to get to, to the fact that, the Jewish people, no matter what, they go and understand and they go to basic with the biblical teaching, they would not assume the practice of the old age. They know, you know, they had the sages that, you know, that emancipated with time. But for some reason, the other, you know, the Muslim extremists think that going to basic is going to killing and again. I don't understand why the emancipation didn't happen there too, because, you know, the teaching of the Bible teaches, you know, a lot of horrible stories, but everybody understands that the interpretation is what counts. It's like what not to do, how the world evolved, how they're going to go and, you know, have this leap, too. You know, they don't leap. They didn't emancipate for some reason on that level.
Because a human is still a human. And a human will make an interpretation of what fits his belief systems and create the God in his own image. And that image changes, you know, depending on the period. So the he's really projecting himself and his fears and his desires for control and whatever he carries within and his frustrations onto an impression of a creator. See, and so what you're having at a level of all religions and all these branches of it is that they're all creating basically a god in gods in their image. It's not the same God, even though they all profess that we all come from the same creator. That creator seems to be changing depending on the period and the time and the situation on the ground.
Yeah, but we believe, you know, our belief is that God of Israel is, you know, the truth. The truth about it didn't change. You know, they can interpret
the God of Israel Israel is the name of God. So the children of Israel are the children of God.
Right.
Yaakov is called Israel when he gets to that realization. The Yesh is the Yiz, you know. By the way, it's not Israel, it's Yesharel. Yesharel is like straight to God. So that's a straight connection to El. But, when you have that connection, then you get aligned with the nature of the Creator, which is pure love, pure giving, pure... That's all the Creator does. It gives life to everybody. It wants to give us a life of joy. We are the ones who are making interpretations that are disconnected. So it's not about... We carry that knowledge in our DNA because some of our ancestors have had this connection straight. And we're supposed to bring it about to the world. And, some of us have done a very good job. Some of us have done an insular job. They've isolated themselves in walls and not brought this about to the rest of the world. Because the Creator creates everything. He doesn't create one part of creation and the other part is created by something else. So that is what we're missing here. It means that the world is like a game of mirrors. If we do our job and we bring in that notion that the one Creator is the one Creator, the Creator of everything, you know, man, nature, all creatures, the cosmos, everything, and there are many cosmoses, by the way. So then we could solve that problem easily. But if we create that, you know, my God is stronger than your God, or my God is more powerful, or truer to the true reality, and we argue about it, we could have a civilized discussion, but more than often, the discussion just degenerates into an uncivilized discussion and then even violence. And that's our problem right now.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you agree with me.
Well, I agree with the notion that people are fighting whose gods is better. That's the whole thing of this ideological war. Because if you think about it from close enough, you realize that they're fighting. It's like a childish game about, you know, they believe that their understanding of God is better, and all the rest need to die, which is...
Yeah, exactly. They're like 3-year-olds in a garden saying, my father is stronger than your father. But the grandfather is the same grandfather, you know. So they have the same origin, but they're fighting. When children fight in a garden, they just use sticks, you know. We're about to use nuclear weapon. We're very, very primitive beings for now. With all the knowledge we have, all the interpretations we've gotten, and all the explanation we try to give, we're still not going back to the core. The core is, you know, like Isaiah says, I'm God who created everything, heavens, earth, Yotero Borechoshech, you know, the one that creates light, and creates darkness too. I create darkness. I created what will be the parts that will be in the lack of enlightenment. They won't understand. So evil is also part of me. It's not that I created it on purpose, but the part of not understanding me is me too. So that's the one creator. That notion of the one creator creating everything, which is, you cannot get anything simpler than that, is not there yet. They all talk about it, yes, but they don't focus on it. Whether to focus on it, we would solve all the problem, because everybody is saying there's one God. The Christians are saying that there's only one God too. They say, you know, that the Son and the Father are one, and there's one God. But there's nobody saying that there's a different God.
And they keep on solving it by killing the rest. It's like many people in history, you know, tried to eliminate everybody else around them because they wanted to be the last, you know, to be with God or something like that. And sure enough, they destroyed themselves at the end. It's their way of going into destruction, and sure enough, they worship death. And I don't know if, you know, it's like people that sometimes we say, are we supposed to save them from themselves? Are they going to be, because they are hurting everybody else, and they're hurting themselves, because at the end of the day, they volunteer to die in the name of God. And it's like people that are not well and not in their state of mind that, you know, they can hurt themselves. Are we not seeing the problem from the right side? You know, that we actually consider them equal fighter, which they're not, like they're handicapped. They don't see it. You know, they're killing themselves in the process.
Oli, are you talking about the Muslims, or are you talking in general, humanity right now?
No, I'm talking about the Muslims, because the humanity are trying to save themselves from, you know, they are preserving
I don't want to be a prophet here, but if the Muslims were not to be here, the two religions that are left would start fighting amongst each other. I mean, among the original creations originating from Abraham also, because the state of consciousness of humanity is still very childish, very low, and you're projecting a state of conquering your belief of imposing your truth upon someone else. And that truth is not a static truth, it's dynamic. If you go to any religion right now, and you make like a static image. You know, you take a snapshot of what they believe in a certain area, and then you do the same thing 50 years ago and 100 years ago. It's totally different. It changes constantly. So, is it really worth for us to kill each other in the name of this or that, when what's important is the core? It's like if a right hand of a body is fighting the left hand. There's something wrong with the core of that being, because there's still one being. That's what we are constantly fighting each other, you know, politically, you know, socially, now maybe you know, religiously. Now it's coming back, and really for no reason, just to have this sense of being more alive, because you belong to a grouping that you hope is going to win the battle for truth.
Right. Hold on a second, Gerald. We want to go to a break, but hold that thought because I want to get back to you and talk about, you know, how we can evolve. Let's go to a break, and we'll be right back. Gerald, are you with us?
Yeah.
Oh, you see there, it's a sample of the war that, you know, people faced before and once again, and now they want to go. There is any other way to gain or to achieve something instead of going to a war?
Absolutely, yeah. You have to understand that humans, especially lately, are not fighting for power or control or conquer, you know, the quest to conquer another necessarily. Behind all this is a tremendous fear to lose their identity, a sense of identity. What they think is a sense of identity. It could be a tribal, it could be a political sense of identity, it could be a nation, sort of identity. And as they are, the world is getting more populated and the resources are getting scarcer and nature is having more than hiccups, it's really not doing very well. There are some beings who are becoming somehow ruthless and manipulating others also, trying to get them into conflict, so that's done very easily. The problem we're having is that you say, yeah, we don't learn from history, we'll repeat it. Because we, as humans, we operate from the past to the future. We operate from cause to effect. And if we don't learn, then we repeat the same. The cause is still there, and then you will create a similar effect under different circumstances, different societies, different technologies, but it's still going to be a similar effect. And we don't have real teachers, people that say stop, you know, just stop for a while, you know, let's have one day off, and sit down, and take our masks down, our costume down, and realize that we are. Let's get naked again as humans, descending of the same human, you know, Adam. Let's do the Garden of Eden for one more day, and realize that we're all a family. You know, we look different. We operate differently. We speak now different languages. It was done on purpose. It's an experiment in creation. You know, when you have a creation that has created the ability to forget who we really are, which are really children of Israel, children of God, of the same God, all of us. We're children of the is, not of nothing. And we are gifted the gift of life. As a gift, not to be destroyed. Yes, it has to be cherished. And we're not here to kill anybody or to destroy nature or to kill another under some ridiculous, beyond primitive idea that you're gonna get your rewards in another, area of operation, which is, you know, an easy way to control people. If we realize that we, as we are here, our duty is to become joyful in this state, in this world. Our duty is to love not only our children, which we have as a program, and not even that is being achieved now, but to love our community, to love our tribe, to love our neighbors, to love the foreigner, the one that we think is a foreigner. You know, in Hebrew they say, "V'afta le'racha kamocha." You should love your neighbor, so to speak, as yourself. Well, ra in Hebrew is really what you perceive as being evil. That's a name for evil. Because the one that you perceive is different from you and is thinking differently than you is the one, that's the challenge in this creation. You should love him as yourself because in reality, he's but yourself. He's just another child of Israel. He's another child that shows itself in a different way that you don't understand yet. So instead of, you know, blocking him and making barriers, try to understand that you come from the same core. Everybody was born from, in our belief system, in the Judeo-Christian Muslim tradition, from Adam, from one consciousness that started it all. That is a godly consciousness.
Absolutely.
And we never go back to the
to the basis. We never go back to the axiom. Everybody forget that we're all children of Adam, not the children of this, the children of that. But they don't realize that they're all cousins in reality.
And Eve, so please, let's remember Eve for a minute.
No, Eve is a part of Adam. She's the part who is projecting a material reality. But we'll discuss the creation of the way this creation was created. She's extremely important, but even she is a part of Adam. It's all one.
You're absolutely right. That's a very well said.
Adam is created with male and female at the same time. He's not created separated. That separation happens later.
Right, because that's God created a man and a woman. That's true. That's the first.
With all the nature of God, he's created an image of God. Absolutely. And he is God. Just God in this mode of operation.
We have to run. We're running out of time. We're finishing this time, and this is the place and the time to tell you Happy New Year. Bless everybody around you, and may we continue to have some of your sunshine that you always, always give to everybody else. Thank you so much for coming
on
the show.
Thank you.
And let's get a break. Thank you. Shana Tova, Shana Tova.
Shana Tova. Happy New Year to all of us.
Todamote. Thank you. God bless you. God bless you. I love you. God bless you. Take care.
Thank you.
And this world is beautiful, and it's so great. And I know that there are so many people out there, great people out there, that sometimes, want to say something. And I never give out a number, and I apologize. And I want to give a number now. If anybody wants to say hello, say, goodbye or whatever, it's 1-888-627-6008. Once again. 1-888-627-6008. And this is the number if you want ever to call and say hello. And I know that I dedicate this program today for the end of the Jewish year, because we had a rough year as far as the Jewish people go. It's ridiculous what we had to go through as far as, trying to get under, the abuse of one war, then the abuse of people saying stuff about us, then they want to stop buying from us. And when we work so hard to be worthy before God, and they have to understand being worthy before God is like fighting your pride, keeping on against all odds. And, we're succeeding. The Jewish state exists, and it's here, and it's going to be lasting this time, because it has the capability to understand that its purpose is to enlighten the world. And it's people like you that can understand, people like, my friends that try to explain, people like, the world's leaders that do understand the divine mission that the Jewish people are in. It's not easy to be a Jewish person, and trust me, it's not a pleasant sometimes, but it's a gift. It's a gift, because if you have a duty to serve, you honor it, and you feel very honored. It's really hard not to have fun. It's hard not to go. And on the beaches of Tel Aviv, which are beautiful, this year we had to forget about the beaches. We had to forget about so many things this year, because we had the duty to protect this land. We didn't want to run away. We united, and we showed the world that we are here to stay. And we have so many issues that life takes us day in, day out, and we want to solve them. And we want to be a good neighbor, and we want to become a participant in the economy, in the thinking of the world. And, this global alliance, it's something, let me say it out loud. Global alliances against terrorism without Israel that is facing it every day, it's not normal. It's not normal. Something like the same thing like the Human Rights Organization in United Nations that kicked the America, United States of America, from the committee, which was the most ridiculous thing in the world. It's the same thing now. Israel just finished one fight, and we organize it in global alliances, but Israel is not on the team. Why? When Israel is off the team, why do Israeli are off any team? You know, are we only good for, you know, medication that we go when we send people to Africa? You know, there is a story right now that there is the medicine for the Ebola that helped save two doctors someplace. The Jewish state or some Jewish organization, Israeli, I guess, found some kind of medicine that I guess that helps. But for some reason, they don't want to promote it, or it doesn't get approved by any organization. I don't understand. Guys, let's lighten up. This is not the end of the world. You know, God is not going to bestow us, you know, gold and cherries from, you know, just from nothing. God bestow us with responsibility. It's like the old kid that has to take care of his little brothers. What's the big deal? You know, we have to work together. So this is my position. This is my way of telling the world, we love you all. I'm here in the Jewish state. I'm American too, an American by spirit, by big time, and everybody knows that. And of course, I am a woman. I'm very happy to be a woman, but love, love, love also the other side, you know, to be gentle and be kind. And we want to know that, you know, there are people out there that can come together, unite. It's time to unite the world. It's about time that we... Our march for freedom is really inside us, and we look at each other's eyes, as they say, you know, you, as Gerald just finished to say, the enemy or the other people. It's like, we are not going to fight you anymore in that savage way that you try to do. And, of course, when they have dangerous things happening, and you know that they are going to plan to kill others, you have to protect yourself. It's the rules. Nothing going to change about that. They're going to attack. We're going to defend. We're going to attack back. We're going to make sure nothing happens. But by eliminating one group of people, sometimes you save thousands. Sometimes you save more. Sometimes you stop the circle of violence, because you know, I never wonder why, you know, World War II, they throw, you know, these big bombs. Why? Because they had to stop it. Nothing we can do about it. It's the truth. We had to stop that war in some way or another. And even though that it's not pleasant to think about it, we have to face this new year, the Jewish New Year, with a resolution before God to say, I hope to be worthy before you today, to worship the land that you give us, to worship the place that we are in, to make it holy, to create a space where God can be among us and Jerusalem can be a city for all, because it will be incredible if we can make Jerusalem holy, clean it all, make it nice, build it, make it facilitate visiting for everybody, visits and tourism, and build a temple one day. I don't know what the heck is going to happen, you know, because we don't want to go against anybody else. Believe God forbid, and honest to God, I leave it to Him. I just say we need to start cleansing our soul, make it be worthy, because we did everything in our power to destroy this world. it's about time we built it back and show that we are worthy. This is Orly Benny Davis, and this is Impossible Truth on BBS Radio. I thank you, Doug, for my assistant today. I hope that we can talk again and again, and God bless you all. Happy New Year for all the Jewish people and all for the rest of you. I'll talk to you next week, God willing. Happy and wonderful time you all have. God bless you all. Talk to you later.